okay.
No. Okay, so today we have a talk of Zikai. He is actually a postdoc in Southampton. But before he had his PhD in the IBGP in Paris, in the Satish Singh group. Okay. And after, before that, he also made his master thesis also in Satish.
Yes.
Okay. But before he was in China, and he made his PhD in Beijing.
Yes. Yeah.
And he is mainly working on seismic processing. He will show us a few examples and making some full wave inversions. So you are making all seismic processing, okay? Yes. from acquisition to integration. So he will be here in the building for the whole afternoon discussing. But if you have some questions, some time after that, and he is here up to 5 o'clock or something. So welcome to the panel.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Daniel. And hello, everyone. So I'm Zikai. I'm going to present some work I made during my PhD about the oceanic transform faults. So the title is Deep Hydration and Lithospheric Thinning at Oceanic Transform Plate Boundary. So now let's start from the very beginning of plate tectonics. So the basic idea of plate tectonics is the outer shell of the Earth, which we call the lithosphere. It's the crust plus the rigid part of the upper mantle. The lithosphere is divided into several plates, and then these plates move relative to each other over a weak asthenosphere underneath. So based on the relative motion between plates, we have defined three types of plate boundaries. The first one is divergent plate boundary at mid-ocean ridge, where two plates move apart from each other, and then the new lithosphere is formed. And then the second one is subduction zone, where two plates move towards each other and one sink beneath another one. It's also a destructive plate boundary where one plate is destroyed. And the third one is transform plate boundary, where two plates move, laterally bypass from each other. So the transform port accommodates the lateral motion between the two plates. And based on the lithosphere transform port crosscut, we divide the transform port into two types. One is the continental transform fault, which crosscut the continental lithosphere. For example, the San Andreas fault in the west of the US. But today I will focus on the oceanic transform faults. So oceanic transform faults generally offset the mid-ocean ridge. So based on the definition, only the fault offsets the ridge more than 30 kilometers, then we call it a transform fault. Otherwise, we call it non-transform offset. And the transform fault is globally is 48,000 kilometers long and comprises almost 1/5 of the total length of the global plate boundary.
Annually, okay.
And then here is the map of the equatorial Atlantic Ocean. So the red line is mid-ocean ridge and the black is the transform fault. And so the crustal structure as the oceanic transform fault is, I will say, is complicated, depends on the spreading rate. So but in general, the transform fault, the crust is characterized by a low velocity, but the crustal thickness is spreading rate dependent. For the fast spreading rate, for example here, the Clipton transform fault on the fast spreading is the Pacific rise, and the crust is at transform fault is normal as the normal oceanic crust. But for slow spreading rate, for example, here is the Vilma transform fault in the Atlantic Ocean. It offsets a slow spreading rate, and you can see the crust is very thin. So several models have been proposed to interpret this difference between fast and slow spreading rate. So here is one model. So they think the mantle upwelling below the fast and slow spreading rate, they are different. Below fast spreading, the mantle is shade-like, it's uniform. So the melt produced everywhere along the ridge is uniform, more or less the same. But for slow spreading ridge, they think it's a plume-like or mantle upwelling. So more the mantle upwells faster at the segment center and slower at segment end. So more melt produced at segment center. But some other later studies, they propose another model here for slow spreading ridge. They think the mantle upwelling for both fast and slow spreading, they are uniform, but at slow spreading ridge, the lithosphere thickness along the ridge axis, they are different. They are thinner at the segment center and thicker at the segment end. So I'm not sure you can see here this gray arrow. They represent the melt migration along the base of the lithosphere to the shallow part of the lithosphere, which is at the segment center. So another thing we care about oceanic transform fault is the seismicity or the earthquake. Why we study oceanic transform fault? First, oceanic transform fault can host large strike sweep earthquakes, and there are some previous earthquakes with a magnitude up to 7 or more than 7. Another reason is transform fault, they have a regular or a short seismic cycle. So for example, at the fast spreading EPR, the cycle is around 5 years. So for a scientist, during your life, you can, if you study the oceanic transform fault, you can study several cycles. So that's another reason. The third reason is oceanic transform fault, until now, they already have a determined fault length and spreading rate. So a lot of parameters, they are determined. So it's an ideal site for studying the earthquake behavior. But the previous study about the earthquake or the brittle deformation on oceanic crust form fault, they got different conclusions. So this is a study from the Romanche crust form fault. So they relocate the depths of the focal depths, and then they do thermal modeling, and they found most earthquake, almost all the earthquake occurs about the 600 degree isotherm. But some recent work studying the brittle, I mean the rock stretched from the transform fault, and they found the brittle deformation occurs at least to the depths corresponding to 850 degree. So now we want to know what exactly the maximum depth the earthquake or brittle deformation can occur on oceanic transform fault. And the third thing we care about is the, we call it LEP, it's the boundary between lithosphere and the asthenosphere. So this figure shows what happened at the spreading center. And at the spreading center, mantle will upwells and start from some depths, because of the decompression, and because of the release of the pressure, and the mantle start to melt, and the melt will form the crust, and the residual mantle will move away from the spreading center, and with the lithosphere move away from the spreading center, it will thickens with increasing age. So in this case, in this figure, if we take a profile from one spreading center across the transform fault to the other side, and then the thermal structure study, they think of the lithosphere, the lithosphere asthenosphere boundary will look like this. So one side is younger, hotter, and thinner lithosphere. The other side is colder, thicker lithosphere. But what happens in between? Actually, there's no data. But they think one side is hotter, one side is colder, and then they define, thermally define the LEP like this. But what we want to know is what's the nature of the lithosphere exactly at the beneath the oceanic crust fault, and what's the thickness? So that's why in 2018 we had Alex Spark experiment in the equatorial Atlantic Ocean. And this is our studying area. So in the equatorial Atlantic Ocean, there are three large oceanic transform faults. From north to south, we call it Tsongpo and Romanche and Chen. And our target is the Romanche transform fault. And we deployed a wide-angle seismic active source seismic profile, which is in this figure in brown line. And we deployed 50 ocean bottom seismometers. So here is the Romanche transform fault. And across this transform fault, the age of the lithosphere to the north is 40 million years, and to the south is 7 to 8 million years. So why we choose Romanche transform fault? It's because it's the end member of oceanic transform fault. It's the longest oceanic transform fault on this Earth. It's about 880 kilometers long, and the maximum age contrast at the ridge transform intersection is about 45 million years. Another reason is for most oceanic transform faults, they have a single, narrow, and straight transform valley. But for Romanche transform fault, it's very different. Here, this red lens-shaped outlines the transform, the broad transform valley of Romanche transform fault. So it's not, for Romanche, it's not only one transform fault. It's currently the transform fault marked by the red solid line is active. But about 8 to 10 million years ago, the transform fault is northward, which is represented by this red dashed curve. So that means the transform will jump this time. So it's a very special site. So that's why they choose Romanche transform fault. And then my work is to use seismic tomography to study the crustal and mantle structure of this transform fault. So here is an example of the OBS data. So here I show the near offset, the offset between 40 kilometers. And we care about here the dying rays from the crust, and here the turning rays from the mantle, and in between we have the PMP arrival, which is the reflection of the MOHO boundary. And so these two plots, they are the same, but here we plot the peaks. I think we are lucky because on 6 OBS we recorded very long mantle reflection at the very far offset. Here is a good example. Offset here is 300 kilometers. That side is 700 kilometers. I'm not sure it's clear, but it's this figure, you can see this is our first arrival, the mantle turning rays. And this is the first order multiple. So we can peak the travel time of the first arrival and then invert the velocity structure at very great depth. I will show you later. So our method is 2D travel time tomography. And for people who is not very familiar with travel time tomography, the workflow is we design a starting model. Generally, it's a 1D velocity model. And we have the travel time peaks. And then we do retracing modeling. So to model the retrace in the subsurface and also the corresponding travel time. And then we calculate or we compare the travel time peaks with the modeled travel time. And then we use the residual to update the velocity and repeat this workflow. And until the travel time or the residual is less than a threshold, and we will stop. And here is the result for the crustal part. So here is our starting region. The red line is our seismic profile. And this is the tomographic velocity. This side is south, this side is north. And here, is the Ramosh transform fault. And it's very clear here we have a low velocity zone compared with the normal volcanic crust. And also here we do image, I mean here the red dashed curve, they represent the PMP reflector, and we do image a MOHO reflector within the transform domain. And the crust here is about 5 to 6 kilometers, and the other part is around 5.5 to 6 kilometers. So there's no significant thinning of crust within the transform domain. And we propose two models to interpret the low velocity and the crust observed there. And the first model, we think, okay, we do have a normal oceanic crust here within the transform domain. And but it's because it's a fault, it's highly fractured. There's very high porosity, maybe with some fluid inside. So that's why the velocity is low. We don't know whether mantle spontanization occurs. So we put a small amount of mantle spontanization, but basically it's oceanic crust, normal oceanic crust. That's the first model. In the second model, we think, okay, here there's no oceanic crust. Everything or most is the spontanized mantle. That's why the velocity is low. But the thing is, which one we prefer, which one is better? So we think the first one, which normal crust within the transform valley, we think this one is better. We prefer this model for several reasons. The first one is there's one ocean bottom seismometer deployed exactly within the transform valley, and they here, this is north, this is south, and they recorded this PMT arrival. Here is crustal turning rays, mantle turning rays, and there's MOHO reflection in between. So in this case, we did some numerical modeling, waveform numerical modeling, and to produce this PMT arrival, we do need a velocity contrast as the MOHO depth. But the thing is, so below this MOHO, the mantle velocity is low, which requires mantle spontanization. If mantle spontanization occurs both in the crustal level and mantle level, but why there is a velocity contrast? Because mantle spontanization will produce a gradual increase in velocity with increasing depth. So if the here in the crust is spontanized mantle, so we cannot explain this velocity contrast. The second evidence is from the earthquake study. So in 2016, so in our studying region, there's a big earthquake, magnitude 7.1. And so this earthquake initiates around 20 kilometers below the sea level and propagates eastward towards the ridge transform intersection. Here, this black arrow represents the approximate location of our seismic profile. And the earthquake starts from here, propagate upward and eastward to the ridge transform intersection, and stopped at the crustal level, and they triggered a super shear rupture. The super shear rupture, that means the rupture propagates at a very fast, we call it the super shear speed. And then that means the earthquake rupture in this direction, stop here and change the direction and rupture westward at the crustal level. So in this case, we think if the crustal depth is spontanized mantle, then the rock will be weak and cannot support a strong, super shear rupture. That's another evidence support. We do have a strong gabbroid crust in this region. And then before we go to the mantle structure, I will first briefly mention we in 2019 we have another course focused on the micro seismic study. We deployed the 19 ocean bottom seismometers and recorded for 20 days. And here is we relocated the depth of these micro seismics. And this dashed line is our seismic profile. And I only want to mention in this region, close to our seismic profile, the maximum depth, focal depth, is around 34.7 plus minus 3 kilometers. Because we need to use this. Okay, now this is the mental velocity, I mean, the crustal part. Now we focus on the mental velocity. So here is the remote transform relay. And I think it's very clear there's a low velocity anomaly in the mental, start from the motor boundary to around 60 kilometers. And the velocity reduction in percentage is about 8% as the top of the mental, and it's about 1% at around 60 kilometer depth. And then we plot the velocity gradient, which is showing in this figure. So the dashed curve is the velocity gradient in the north part, I mean, north of the remote transform fault. We can say it's around 6 to 7, I mean, per second. It's almost constant from top to bottom. But for the transform fault zone, which is showing in this black solid curve, we can say it's very high vertical velocity gradient, about 16 kilometers, and then decrease between 16 to 32 kilometers. And then below is more or less, we think, is further decreased and more or less constant. And so based on this observation, we divide the whole mental low velocity anomaly into three layers. We put the boundary at 16 kilometer and 32 kilometer. And it's very interesting here, it's the focal depth of microseismicity. And we see most earthquakes occur about 32, and there's at the maximum is around 34. So this gives our confidence to put a boundary at 32 kilometers. But before interpret this low velocity anomaly, we need to do a lot of tests to prove, okay, this is real, not artifacts. What we did is we call it smearing test, because tomography, we need to apply smoothing during the inversion, and the smoothing will smooth out the low velocity and make it larger. So what we did is, this is a synthetic test. We insert a low velocity anomaly with 8% velocity reduction in the mental, and we produce the travel time, and we use the same workflow to invert this data set. This is what we get. So that means, so from this figure, the maximum depth of the low velocity anomaly is 50 kilometers. But after inversion, we say there's almost no low, I mean, there's no almost no velocity reduction below. That means the 1% velocity reduction from travel time tomography at 60 kilometer depth is real, it's not artifacts. But from this synthetic test, we also another thing is the input is 8% velocity reduction, but the output is much less. That's because of the smoothing effect of travel time tomography. That means the travel time tomography underestimates the real velocity reduction. So what we did is we did another group of tests to examine what's the exact the exact velocity within this low velocity anomaly zone. And what we did is, this is our final travel time tomography model, and then we remove this low velocity anomaly, which is here, and then we insert the vertical column with reduced velocity, and then we calculate travel time and to use the same workflow to invert the synthetic travel time set. And then this is what we get. So we did a lot of tests, and then we did a statistic, and this is the final result. The blue curve is the velocity within the transform valley from travel time tomography. And this one is from our synthetic test. That means if you want to get this velocity from travel time tomography, and then the low velocity anomaly should be, the velocity should be lower. So in the interpretation, we actually interpret this black curve. And then when there's some low or high velocity anomaly within the mantle, we usually consider these factors like mantle anisotropy or excess or, I mean, higher or lower temperature, or the mantle hydration, there's water in the mantle or carbon dioxide, or there's presence of melt in the mantle. So I will analyze one by one. So the first one is mantle anisotropy, because the transform fault is a strong shear zone, and it will force the equatorial to align in the splitting direction. So along the splitting direction, velocity will be faster, and in the other direction, the velocity will be lower. But we have some previous study. They suggest perpendicular to the splitting direction, the mantle velocity is low, but the mantle velocity gradient is low as well. It sometimes is negative, but we observe very high mantle velocity gradient. So mantle anisotropy cannot interpret. And then another thing is excess temperature. So because mantle velocity is inversely correlated with temperature, higher temperature means low velocity. So we calculate what temperature is needed to explain the velocity reduction. And it's shown in this figure. So the blue curve is the temperature needed to explain the low velocity. And this brown curve is the solids of the mantle. So here you can see if we use high temperature to explain the low velocity, we need a very high temperature, even higher than the mantle solids. So it's obviously it's not make sense. So that's why we exclude these two, and then I will analyze the other two. So mantle melting, when you have melt in the mantle, and then the velocity will decrease. But we need to think, okay, the mantle will not melt at any temperature. We need a specific temperature, at least higher than the solids, to melt a mantle. So that's why we did thermal modeling, which is shown in this figure. So this is the thermal structure along our seismic profile. This side is south, that side is north. And then we can take the temperature at the center of the transform fault, and then it's plotted here in blue curve. And here, this brown curve is the solids of mantle. So here we can say approximately about 32 kilometers, the transform fault temperature is lower than the mantle solids. That means we should not have melt above 32. And so that's means we cannot use, presence of melt in the mantle to explain the low velocity above 32 kilometers. So now we have only one choice. So above 32 kilometers, the low velocity is due to mantle hydration. But mantle hydration, they have different, performance, I would say, at different depths and temperature. So at temperature less than 500 degree, around 500 degree, so mantle hydration generally produce spentin. We call it mantle spentinization. So that's why we interpret the first layer between the mantle to 16 kilometer as spentinized zone. And then we can calculate like how much mantle spentinization within the mantle. And then this figure shows the velocity variation versus increasing degree of mantle spentinization. And to do this, we also did the temperature and pressure correction. And then our calculation gives, as the mantle depth, just below the mantle, the mantle spentinization is about 55%. And at the 16 kilometer depth, it's around 25%. So mantle spentinization decreased with increasing depth. And then below 16 kilometer to 32 kilometers, the temperature is higher than 500 degree. In this case, spentin is not stable, but mantle hydration can produce other minerals, which is chlorite and amphibole. So we use these two hydrated minerals to explain the low velocity. And because I already show the local depths of the microseismicity, if we have microseismicity and the earthquake, and they can create the path for water to penetrate to very deep depths. And this can explain why we have mantle hydration between 16 and 32. And then we can calculate the amount of mantle hydration. And so these two figures shows the mantle velocity variation with increasing decrease of mantle hydration. And then our calculation gives at 16 kilometer depths, the mantle hydration is around 28. If you remember, the calculation from the first zone is around 25, so it's more or less consistent. And at 32 kilometer depths, our calculation gives around 10% of mantle hydration. And then it's the zone below 32 kilometers. And in this case, the temperature is higher than 940 degrees. And in this high temperature, no hydrous mineral is stable. So that means for this zone, the low velocity is not due to mantle hydration. And in this case, our only interpretation is we have melt in the mantle. And then we calculate to account for the velocity, how much melt we need. And this figure shows the velocity variation versus the fraction of melt. And because, as you might know, the mantle velocity, the influence of melt on the mantle velocity is not only depends on the amount of melt, it also depends on the structure of the melt. So here we modeled the several results using different structure of the melt, and we take the aspect ratio of melt of 50. It's just one possible case. And in this case, at 32 kilometers, we need about 1.3% of melt. But the interesting thing is here in this figure, this brown curve is the solid earth of dry mantle, and this blue square is the temperature at 32 kilometer depths. And the problem is our temperature is lower than the mantle, than the high dry mantle solid earth. And in this case, it should have no melt because the temperature is low. So our interpretation is there might be like volatiles in the mantle, and the volatiles will decrease the solid earth of mantle, which is, so for volatiles, we can consider water or carbon dioxide. And here we only consider water because we already have a well-developed model for the water saturated mantle solid earth. And here this blue curve is the solid earth for water saturated mantle. And this magenta curve is the, we modeled this magenta curve because it's our needed temperature located on this curve. And this curve, this is the water saturated mantle, and this is water non-saturated mantle. Is about, there's about 0.22 meter percent of water in the mantle, but it's not water saturated. And in this case, because of the presence of water, and then the solid earth of the mantle will decrease, and then the mantle can melt at a lower temperature. So that's why we call it at 32 kilometers, the mantle starts to melt. But it's not dry mantle melting, it's hydrous mantle melting. And we need this amount of water in the mantle. And then at 60 kilometer depth, this is the, this figure shows how much melt we need to interpret the low velocity. It's about 0.6%. And in this case, here in this figure, the temperature modeled from thermal modeling is around 1370, and to melt a mantle, we actually don't need this high temperature. So in this case, we don't need water, or in other words, we don't need hydrous mantle melting to interpret the low velocity. It's maybe dry mantle melting. And then to interpret the hydrous mantle melting, we need to think about where the water comes from. And here we give two hypotheses. The first one is the water comes from the top, which is seawater penetrate to more than 32 kilometers. And the second hypothesis is the melt comes from below. And here, in a previous work, they image a melt channel beneath the oceanic lithosphere, and with melt and water in this channel. And at the transform fault zone, because one side is shallower and one side the level is shallower and the other side the level is deeper. So the water or the melt maybe migrates from one side to another side. And then because in this case, if we think, okay, the mantle start to melt and then it's not lithosphere anymore, it should be asthenosphere, part of asthenosphere. And in this case, in this figure, at the transform zone, the lithosphere will be thinner because it starts to melt at shallower depths. And then there are two previous studies. They studied the depths of the lab on the other, on both sides of the Romanche transform fault. So at the south, to the south, it's about 32 kilometers below seafloor. And the other side is about, on the south side is about 36 kilometer depth below seafloor, and the other side is 72 kilometers. But our interpretation, the lab exactly beneath the transform valley is only 32 kilometers. So our conclusion is the oceanic transform fault is not characterized by a gradual deepening lab, but the lab is shallower. And then finally, it goes to the conclusion. So the first conclusion is the Romanche transform fault is characterized by a low velocity anomaly start from the seafloor to around 60 kilometer depth. And the second conclusion is the brittle deformation on the Romanche transform fault or globally oceanic transform fault can occur up to 940 degrees. And the third one is the lithosphere at the oceanic transform fault, maybe not deeper, but shallower than the surrounding area. And thank you.
Well, I had one. As you said at the beginning, the Romanche transform fault is very specific.
Yes.
There are some transfer ridges which were uplifted because of a change of kinematic. They were almost at sea level, in fact, some transfer ridges.
You mean this one?
These transform ridges there.
I mean the transform ridge on to the north.
They were almost at the sea level, I think, or
it's below the sea level.
Yeah, below, but it's very shallow, in fact. So it's very specific because there is some compression, and so I wonder if your results are very specific to these specific places, or can they also be found elsewhere on other transform faults?
You mean the transverse ridge can be found elsewhere, or the low velocity anomaly can be found elsewhere? You mean the transverse ridge?
It was such a high, a large, wide valley with a lot of compression. So there is a specific history. I mean, it's not simple.
So I think until now, the formation of this transverse ridge, which is, I'm not sure it's clear, the cursor is here. This transverse ridge, the formation of this transverse ridge is not clear. But some people think this part maybe is exhumed mantle, but from our study, from the velocity, we think it's just a normal oceanic crust. Yes.
Thank you for your presentation. I have two questions.
Yes.
How can you validate the serpentinization nature of the only VP. What about ES?
So yeah, that's a good question. So we need, so here I only show the repeat velocity. In our another work, we did repeat VS inversion, but separately, and then we can calculate the repeat VS ratio, but only for the crustal part. And for the mental part, I think usually we think if you have a low velocity, and especially it's a fault zone, and with water on the top, we think it's mental spontaneization. Yeah, it's a hypothesis.
The second question, what do you use as starting model for your spike test, for example?
So the starting model, so the water column is just 1.5 kilometers per second fixed, and we have a very thin sedimentary layer, and we give a fixed velocity 1.8 kilometers per second. And below, in the starting model, we assume a 6 kilometer thick crust. And the velocity is extracted from, there's a global synthesis for the crustal velocity and mental velocity. So we use the 1D global average velocity. So at the beginning, the whole model is 1D.
This is the same model you use for the spike test?
Yeah.
You try to impose low velocity perturbation because you showed that it is hard, difficult to recover the.
You mean to put a low velocity as in the starting model?
Yeah, in your
We don't do that because it's a little bit inversion quiet. So you put a low velocity there, and after inversion, you got a low velocity, and it's, you cannot convince people what the low velocity comes from. So that's why in the starting model, we just put the same velocity everywhere, and then we go to low velocity.
But in the other side, when you don't put prior, you know that travel time tomography is dependent on the initial model, so you will never recover the spike.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, yeah, it's a good idea, but I think if you, in the starting model, you put a low velocity, it's less convincing. Yes.
So, a question. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
You considered everything in under the isotropic approximation, right? The tomography and the waveform modeling.
No, here it's only tomography.
Yeah, but then you showed the modeling, the seismograms, and some. Then you said
that it didn't fit well at some point. You mean the peaks? It doesn't fit well?
You showed the
model seismograph, no? Sorry, I didn't really get. You mean this figure?
Yeah, this one.
Yes.
It's observed seismograph.
It's observed. It's the real
okay,
data.
So it comes to my question.
Oh, okay. Maybe I didn't explain very clear. So these two sections, they are exactly the same. The only difference is it overlaps the peaks on the seismic plot.
My question is, if you did tomography under the isotropic approximation, we can imagine that your model represents some VH.
Yeah.
Because mostly all your phase arrows are propagating horizontally.
Yeah.
Why not do waveform modeling by considering VH and creating some Thomson parameters to test if anisotropy is causing this? Because you say that anisotropy is not possible because synchronization is happening in the other axis, etc.
Yeah,
you could have tested that by waveform modeling by considering this tomography model as VH,
yeah,
playing with 5% Thomson parameters.
Yes, it's definitely a good idea, but the thing is, we don't have time and funding to do that. So I think maybe you work on fluid film inversion, you need much more time than tomography.
Sure, sure. So,
it's long time ago, Sadish mentioned there's maybe some people going to write a proposal and work on focus on the transform part, but and then there's no news anymore, so we don't know. But it's definitely a good idea to do full waveform inversion.
Maybe not inversion, just one modeling.
Yeah.
One wave equation solution with this model is VH.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a question about the width of your transform field. What do you think is coming first? Is it spontaneization or is it the fact that you have a large bit broken zone due to earthquakes.
So I think this is difficult. I think it's more like a chicken and egg question, which one started first. But what we know is in this region, we have a very wide transformer lane. And from the mechanism of microseismicity, we know this part is in extension. So it's now today it's still slowly in extension. Maybe why we have this wide transformer lane. But to be honest, I don't know which one started first. So serpentinization start first or large valleys. For this, I don't know. But we know here we have deep hydration and definitely related to the extension of the transformer lane.
Questions?
Yeah. I think there were a lot of sampling along the Transverse Valley by the Italians and so on. And they, I don't remember if they got some serpentinized rocks there
So I think it's really depends on like which course. So there are some paper from Marco Ligi's. Generally, his paper is very, very long, and you lose patience when reading the paper. So I think this part is called Dos Gabbro. This part is called Dos Gabbro and Brittotite. And then the French community, they automatically did some new dredging rock collection in 2019, the smartest course in this area. I think he got what they told me, they got that part, they got garbled with some prototypes.
So it's consistent with your.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because for a long time they think this part
is
magma pool. It should be like a detachment for this exhumed metal. But now I think, I'm not sure the paper is out, but we start to think, okay, maybe this part is not really magma pool. We do have volcanic activity.
So your crystal thickness is not so different from the global average?
No.
Because usually, a long time ago, I remember that people were saying that in that area, you have mantle, cold mantle,
yes.
Thin crust, and
yes.
So on. But now, it's not so clear. So, well, it's clear that maybe it's not so clear.
Yeah, it's not clear. So we have, I didn't show here, but we have a study along the whole seismic profile, because this profile, it brings across two fracture zones and one transform fault. And for the three tectonic discontinuities, we observe normal oceanic crust, slightly thinner. And we use not only VP velocity, but VPVS ratio. So that means this region may be special. And we think it could be related to the long transform fault in this region, because in this region we have three long transform faults. This one is about 560 kilometers long. This one is 300 to 400 meters kilometers long, and this one is almost 900 kilometers long. And now people, some people working on modeling, they start to think, okay, transform fault is not a cold site. I mean, the shear heating can increase the temperature of the transform fault. So if I show you so this is the upper model, because in the presentation I only show you the thermal structure across the transform fault, and this one is along the transform fault. And I think if you work on this, you know before they think the thermal structure like this, and the temperature is lowest at around the center of the transform fault. But now the new modeling result suggests it's not like that.
So you are hotter along the transform fault than on the ridge?
No, it's not hotter. So ridge is this part.
Yes.
The transform is this part. So transform faults, the temperature is higher than modeled before, but it's not hotter than rich.
But in both segments, the crystal thickness is about 6 kilometers.
Yeah, 5 to 6 kilometers.
I have another question that I don't really know about that, but you said it could be anisotropy to explain this is a damage zone.
Yes.
But the damage zone is maybe much more than just anisotropy. Maybe there's another parameter.
So, simply speaking, anisotropy can, as you might know, when you have a strong shear, as all even will align in one direction, parallel the slipping or the shear direction. And in this case, in this direction, the mental velocity will be faster.
Yeah.
And then in the perpendicular direction, the mental velocity will be slower. And that's why we think, okay, we observe a low velocity, maybe related to this anisotropy.
So you tested 4 parameters?
Yeah. But we think
the best parameter to take into account the damage zone is mental anisotropy.
No, it's not mental anisotropy.
Okay.
We exclude that one because
yes.
Mental anisotropy will produce a low velocity perpendicular to the spreading direction, but it will produce a low velocity gradient as well, and sometimes in perpendicular to the spreading direction, the mental velocity gradient is negative.
Yeah.
So that's why we exclude this.
But which is a parameter which would take into account the damage zone itself, physically?
Sorry, I didn't.
You have four parameters to explain the low velocities.
Okay.
But I don't know which one could represent to take into account the damage zone itself. Because it could be the original.
I think there's no. So our interpretation is at different depths, it's different, controlled by different factor.
Mm-hmm.
So about 32 is hydration. Below is because of the presence of melt. And anisotropy, or maybe increased temperature, maybe have slightly influence on this, but it's not the dominant factor.
You don't think that another parameters could be tested here?
Like such as yeah, we do think about because from the dredged rocks they found like some frozen melt in the pegmatite, and so because the frozen melts they have slower velocity than the normal pegmatite, but I think in that paper, we think the mental, we call it mental impregnation. It occurs about 32. But even we consider that it cannot explain the velocity reduction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Merci.
That's so good.